This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. Good to have you with us. You're listening to the William Hill Golf Podcast, and it's Dave Kellner here, alongside Dave Tindall, to look ahead to the Joburg Open and the Honda Classic in the golfing world this week. The Joburg Open, of course, a co-sanctioned event with the Sunshine Tour and the European Tour. And the main event is the Honda Classic on the PGA Tour this week. It's good to be here. Good to be back on the Golf Podcast with Mr. Tindall. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm very well, are you, after your skiing adventure?
There was only one international incident, which is a new record on this particular ski holiday. Just took one German girl out on the unceremoniously dumped to the floor.
In what sense did you take her out?
Well, not in the good sense. Not in the good sense, Dave. It was just a clash, really, on the mountain. It wasn't my fault this time.
Okay.
I swear it wasn't. And that was the only real incident of note on the holiday.
Had she stolen your towel or something? Yeah. Gotta let these things pass you by.
We've got a couple of good events this week. Let's just reflect on last week first, though, Dave. And what a Sunday it was. First of all, in the Indian Open, and then filtered onto the PGA action at Riviera as well. There was muck flying everywhere, wasn't there, really? I mean, it was, no one wanted to win those events.
No. It did seem very obvious when the two guys in India were leading, Chaurasia and Saduka, because they'd got tremendous course form at that venue at Delhi, all in kind of these Asian tour events, because it held three a year, so there was like absolute raft of course form. And those two had, you know, got numerous wins there and just seemed quite obvious. But beforehand, you couldn't really get too excited about 25-1 because you sort of trained yourself to thinking this is a European Tour event. So it seemed really obvious. But then something even more obvious happened and Lahiri won. But, I mean, to me, he was just done back. It was something like 13-2 or something.
Yes.
But it's one of those ones, I don't know. There seems to be, I don't know, in golf these days, I think there are a lot of unbackable winners, if you see what I mean, who aren't value but they win. So how far do you start, you know, relaxing you?
Do you think with Lahiri, two wins in his last three starts now, is it a case of him improving or have the cards just fallen right for him?
I think he had to have some help, didn't he, to win both events, to be honest. But, you know, you've got to be there and he's the guy who was there. So I think when you win one as well, you've got that idea that somehow, you know, you will win another one because you just feel you might pull something out. I mean, he was seven shots back, but I think the key was there wasn't that many players in front of him, so he didn't have too many to pass, and, you know, those other two going the other way. They just, I mean, Chaurasia had won the European Tour events before, so I didn't really see him doing that. But, yeah, Lahiri, you know, fair play to him.
Mm. On the PGA Tour, we had a classic test at Riviera on Sunday night, and a whole host of players in with a chance of winning on the Sunday as well. And in the end, Dustin Johnson got himself into a playoff with Paul Casey and eventual winner James Harn, who looked the most unlikely winner on Sunday night for long periods. I think if you backed numerous players in that event and they were in with a chance on Sunday, you will have feel kind of aggrieved.
Even someone like Jordan Spieth, who seemed to just sort of tried to chip in, didn't he? I think he thought -7 would win. He tried to chip in, just went by. Probably thought, oh, that's me done, and then probably didn't take enough care on his putt. That would have got him into a playoff, as it happened.
Incredible.
But we were just talking off air. We both got Dustin Johnson anti-post on the money list at a fancy price.
Yeah.
And Alex Dunn had put him up on this very podcast.
He had.
To put us all to shame last week. So it was a bit of a sickener, really. And we said, didn't we, it was a combination of Johnson lost it on the 17th by stupidly going for the flag and missing right where he couldn't afford to do. And Harn kind of, well, some of the stars were out for him, weren't they?
I mean,
to hold two putts like that.
Those two shots on 10 on the playoff hole from past the green were incredible, weren't they? Harn's first, and then I thought Dustin Johnson, he's not going to get anywhere close to the pin here. and then hit it to 2 feet.
Yeah.
Hahn holds the putt. Dustin Johnson taps his in, and then Hahn holds a 30-footer.
Yeah, on the next hole. It was by Johnson, yeah.
It was an unbelievable playoff, yeah. Really, and James Hahn might never have another moment like that, yeah, in professional golf.
Yeah, I mean, he was known for doing the Gangnam Style, wasn't he? That was his claim to fame. Kind of, he'll be glad he's got another one, but yeah, that was a. I mean, I don't know what odds he went off at. I mean, he was just absolute skinner, wasn't, yeah, he? Really, really. But yeah, you said something that the difference between first and second was something like $700,000.
Yeah,
which is a gutter, isn't it, for our moneyless
bet? It is
for Dustin.
Yeah. It's devastating, really, and. Just one quick mention before we move on to this week. Dustin Johnson got his brother caddying for him. If he has a more experienced caddy in that situation, does he err on the side of caution on 17 and not play for that flag, knowing that at that moment in time he was one clear with Sergio Garcia, who not predictably, but who canned it up late on. Is there a note of caution from the caddy there who just tells him, listen, we're in command of this golf tournament right now?
Yeah, I guess the balance is you could say, well, yeah, a veteran caddy would just say, stay left and shout in his ear. A, would he listen? I'm not sure. B, does having a mate on the bag get you shots somehow in other ways by relaxing you?
Yeah, possibly.
So you never know. It's a bit of a trade-off.
Let's get stuck into this week then. The Joburg Open first up. This is the co-sanctioned event this week. George Kutsaya is 10-1 favourite. Alex Noren 11-1. Andy Sullivan is 16s. Gregory Bordy 20-1. Thomas Akin is 20s. Byung-Yun Ahn is 22s. Richard Sterney 22s. And it's 28s bar. This is an event that's been dominated by the home contingent since its inception back in 2007. Six of the eight winners hailing from South Africa. If you look at events that have been co-sanctioned in their entirety, 62 events co-sanctioned between the European Tour and the Sunshine Tour, and South Africans have won 38 of them.
Well, that's a good stat. Where, yeah, where have you pulled that from?
I saw that on the European Tour website,
yeah,
I think.
Very good.
But it's a pertinent statistic, isn't, yep, it, this week?
Very much so. I looked at those recent winners in this. They're big names, aren't they? Schwartzel, Sterney. They're kind of Kurtsey, another sort of biggish name. And I looked at it as well. They all had really good form going into it. So it seemed like an easy thing to do this week. Pick an informed big name South African, but yeah, there isn't one really, is
no,
there?
No, not really.
Kurtsey, he's not in the form he was going into it last year. He was coming off the back of a couple of top fives in the Middle East, I think. This year, it's sort of, it was okay. He had a decent Qatar, didn't he, I guess. Played in that Dimension Data thingy last week. 10-1, he was 11-1 last year because I backed him. You always remember the ones you back, don't you? So I'm not really wanting to back him at 10s, to be fair.
It's an event that's played over two courses, this one, at Royal Johannesburg and Kensington Golf Club. The East course is the significantly tougher of the two courses. That's hosted seven South African Open Championships in the past. Players will look to build a score on the West course. Each player has an opportunity on the West course before the 36-hole cut. Do you think big hitters have an advantage here, Dave? Because the East course can measure up to around about 7,600 yards. Is there anything that you deem crucial in terms of the statistics looking at this event?
I'm not sure, because Joburg's at altitude, isn't it? So I think the ball does fly there. So you look at the card and think, ah, my word, 7,500 yards. It's not particularly outrageous when you knock off whatever percentage you knock off for the altitude. So
yeah.
I didn't really look at that, to be honest. I just thought classy players. I mean, some short hitters have been up there in past years, so I wouldn't use that as a determining factor.
A lot of people look at the field and think 200 runners. We're going to get a shock here. But yeah, as you mentioned earlier, the cream does tend to rise to the top in these events. You see, yeah, it year in, year out, and I expect that to be the case on this occasion as well. Just the one pick for me here.
Mm-hmm. You go for it.
How many have you got?
Two, I think.
Okay.
Just about get another one.
I'm going to go for the South Korean Byung-Yun Ahn as my only selection here.
That saved me mine then, because that's mine as well.
Is, yeah, it really? Yeah. 22-1.
I'm glad
to
he's yours, because I was fearing how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, he's been incredible, hasn't he, really, yeah, this season. He looks a prodigious talent, doesn't he, in all honesty. Rookie season on tour, couldn't have started any better. Worst finish this season came in South Africa, incidentally. It was tied 22nd in the Alfred Dunhill. Since then, finished tied 12th in Abu Dhabi, tied fifth in Qatar and tied 13th in Dubai in the Desert Classic. And that's against an altogether different calibre of opposition, isn't it? This is a seller at Sedgefield compared to some of the finishes he's posted in big events on the European Tour already this season. In addition to that recent form, he's got a little bit of form at the venue as well.
Yeah.
59th here last year, and it could have been a lot better.
Well, he was ninth going into the final round. That was surprising. That was a bonus to me. I was wanting to back him anyway, and then I saw that. And I think it was the last round, 78.
Yeah.
But kind of sort of hid it away a little bit, didn't it, his course form, although his price suggests it's not too hidden away, does it?
No, lots of people have latched onto him, haven't they,
yeah,
I think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the other thing, people who don't know his background, he won the US Amateur in 2009. So he marks himself down as like a massive talent, but he's just taken time to come to the boil, to be honest. And this is his rookie season. You would have thought winning that back then, you know, he might have started flying much sooner. But, you know, here he is. He's kind of built his career, you know, on the Challenge Tour. And now he's really, really found his straps, hasn't he? Hit his straps. So I think he could be anything, this guy. I think he could be, you know, fast forward to next year, he could be challenging favouritism if he lines up here again. He could really, really kick on, couldn't he?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I think he's, well, his parents, Olympic medalists.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've read that somewhere.
It's table tennis.
Yeah, I'm sure that, yeah, that they are. I don't know. I didn't even know which sport, but I read it somewhere and I'm not checked up before coming in to do this podcast. So there's clearly pedigree there as well for him. So I'll go with him as my selection. Obviously, one of your two picks, Dave.
Maybe we should back him for the Olympics in Rio.
Yeah, that possibly
so. Keep him in mind. Yeah. Put that in your book.
What's the other one?
Just Garth Mulroy. Just I thought he was a sporting price at 50s. I mean, at his best, he's won web.com tour events, European tour event, and he's twice a runner-up in this field. In this tournament, I think he's got a ninth as well. It's just at his best, I think his price should be, you know, it should be shorter than that. I mean, you've got, you know, a decent young player like Danny Van Tonde at 28, so I don't quite know why he should be that. And Mulroy 50s, given his pedigree and his course form. I think the last couple of years, I think he's been a bit of, you know, you said about Arne, someone's latched onto. Mulroy in this event because they saw those two little number twos in his course form.
Yes.
And they seem to be a bit forgotten this year, so I think that's a sporting each way price for Mulroy. 16th last week, 35th in Dubai before that, so he seems to be rounding into a little bit of form, so yeah, I think that's fair enough, that price.
Okay, 50-1 Garth Mulroy. I tended to look at the top end of the betting in this event, in all honesty. I expect one of the big names to win. I came close to picking both Andy Sullivan and Gregory Bordy, in all honesty.
I thought you might pick Bordy, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I've been on him twice this season, yeah, and it's paid off. He's finished tied fifth on the two occasions I've backed him each way. And 20s is fair. Just preferred Arne slightly at 22s, but I think 20s is fair. Maybe doesn't have quite the same scope as Arne, and that's something that I definitely looked at. But he's a four-time winner on tour, a few decent finishes in South Africa recently, third in the Alfred Dunhill Championship back in 2012, second in the African Open in 2013, and three starts in South Africa last year, all yielded top 30 finishes. So
yeah, very much so, yeah.
He looks solid each way, and Andy Sullivan's elevated his game, hasn't he, to the next level, really. Yeah. That win in the South African Open earlier on in the season and fifth here last season. I think maybe you can... He struggled in Malaysia, but you can forgive that because that was fifth straight week on tour. Mm-hmm. Lots of travel as well from the events in Qatar to Malaysia. So I expect him to come back refreshed this week. So I thought 16s and 20s were fair on those two, and I'd much prefer Sullivan and Bordy and Arne, obviously, to Kutsaya and Norrin at the top end of the betting.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough. Sullivan, he's just having a blast, isn't he? You just tell his body language. He played, was it in Dubai? He was paired with Keimer and McIlroy, and he said something like, I thought they'd got it wrong or something. So he's still a bit of a kind of like competition winner kind of story, but he's the real deal, isn't he? Very talented guy. So yeah, why not play him now while he's, you know, on a roll?
Any others you want to mention just quickly before we move on, or have we covered this one off?
A brief look at Justin Walters, who was runner-up last year. He's at 50s as well. I thought that was fair enough,
yep,
kind of thing. I'd rather set Walters and Mulroy at 50s than, say, Seve Benson at 40s, just because it's... And Jaco van Zyl's someone who had a shocker of a year last year. He always used to be one you thought, all right, co-sanctioned event, he might get top five. Seems to have bounced back to a bit of form last week, so that Dimension Data thingy.
that's an event that's usually overlooked, isn't it?
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Yeah. But he's built some confidence with that. So 35-1 Van Zyl isn't the worst price, but yeah, I wouldn't go too steaming in. I think if we're going to play that who do you not want to win game, do we want to do it now, or are you going to save it? We'll save it.
Yeah, let's save it to the end. I think you've given the listeners a sneak preview there, Dave, but we'll save that till the end. Let's move on to the Honda Classic then. This is definitely the feature event this week, and Rory McIlroy back in action. He is 100-30 to win the event. Dustin Johnson is 16-1. Justin Rose is 20s. Sergio Garcia, 25-1. Brooks Koepka, Graham McDowell, Keegan Bradley, Lee Westwood, Martin Kaymer, and Ricky Fowler, all 28s, and it's 33s and bigger the rest. This golf tournament, Dave, it's got a big reputation, and it's growing year on year. It seems to attract a better field each and every season now.
Yeah, Rory has made it one of his regular stops, hasn't he, which always marks it down as this is important. Didn't he go head-to-head with Tiger? There was Was that when he won? Tiger came with a wet sail.
Tiger shot 62, didn't he, I think, in the final round, playing ahead of McIlroy, still won the event.
Yeah, and then he famously walked off with his so-called bad tooth in 2013, runner-up again last year when he felt he should have won that one. It's a quality event. It's got that bear trap finish, hasn't it, which is always a good kind of little gimmicky thing that viewers can latch onto. And it's one of those, I think six of the last eight have been won with single digits under par, so it's a proper test, isn't it? And I like these events. I much prefer these to your Humanas, where
definitely
it's whoever puts well, where I think these are easier to hone the field down a bit, because it's, proper men amongst boys, isn't it?
It is. It's a great event, this one. And you mentioned the bear trap there, 15, 16 and 17, couple of demanding par threes in there. Interesting statistic that comes from Rob Bolton's power rankings on the PGA Tour website. Even though those holes are difficult, none of the three holes have ranked inside the top three hardest on the course in the last three editions of the tournament, which is intriguing, given that everyone talks about the bear trap. It's more about the positioning of those holes rather than the difficulty.
Yeah, it's like you come to that and this is where you could blow it. It's kind of like...
lots of water in play on this golf course.
Yeah, it's kind of like the 17th at Sawgrass. Sometimes that... can just be a flick with a wedge if it's calm. But as you say, because that's a penultimate hole, because we've got three of them, it's like three big chances to go wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a bit of a mental thing, isn't it? But, the weather's a factor on those holes, and weather is going to be a big part of this week, isn't it, I think, looking at the forecast, which is no surprise given it's Florida.
It's stormy. Stormy weather forecast, so we could have some interruptions, and the wind, even when they're on the golf course, is key. And I think control is key around this golf course. It is as I've mentioned numerous times on the golf podcast, when we come to a Jack Nicklaus resort, it's the test gets tougher the closer you get to the green. You can get away with it off the tee a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a second shot golf course.
That's always his signature thing, isn't it? Second shot golf course.
So I think you need strong iron players this week.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of picks.
Okay.
How many have you got, Dave?
I've got one outright, and then I'm going to play one in the top 10. I'll mention his outright price, but I think a top 10 is more realistic because he's way, way down the betting.
I'll kick off with Justin Rose as my headline selection here at 20-1. I do like this bet a lot. I think from an each-way perspective, he's got a big chance. Not many real negatives. I suppose you could pinpoint his tendency to start slowly recently as a negative. I'm sure that's something he will sort out, but it has been prevalent in his recent performances. Maybe he's one to wait for in play, you could say that.
Let him set yourself a target like 33s or 28s and go in then.
Yeah, possibly so.
Or half your stake now, half later, something like that.
Yeah, definitely, because he has tended to the first nine holes on a Thursday perform abysmally.
He's
really
looking, well, he's plus three, and you know, what's going on there? And then they sort of grind it back.
And this is a grinder's golf course, isn't it? Which I think definitely suits him. I'm not unduly concerned about his miscut at the Farmers. It's not an event that he's ever really contended in. I'm always willing to forgive one bad week for any particular golfer. And prior to that, he had finished 12th in Abu Dhabi and 13th in Qatar. So not a bad start to the season from Rose. And his form in this event is absolutely exceptional, really. Loves these tough conditions, can handle the wind as well. Five top 15s in eight starts here. And he's placed in his last three at PGA National as well. And you look at his form in Florida, it's sensational. It really is littered with top 10s at the likes of Innisbrook and Doral and Bay Hill. And, of course, one of his wins on the PGA Tour came at Doral back in 2012. He's actually placed nine times in his last 23 starts in Florida, which I think is a decent stat for this week. And this track, arguably, suits him better than any others on that on this East Coast roster. So I think he's a cracking bet each way at 20-1, Justin Rose.
Yeah, very good. Your arguments very much apply to my pick.
Okay.
Keegan Bradley.
Yeah.
Very much so. Likes a tough challenge. Fantastic record in Florida. Loads of top tens in there. He's got current form as well. He stayed on well, didn't he, to finish fourth last week, which was a fine effort on another tough course in a tournament, won with six under, sort of classic Bradley, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
His first win on tour was minus three, the Byron Nelson. Then he won the USPGA with minus eight. So you know what you're getting. He lives, I think, half an hour from this course in Jupiter. And I read a quote where he said, you know, if it's going to be windy, well, I play in the wind every day, you know, at home. So knows how to do that. He's got some really good iron stats as well. I think he swapped irons last week and played really, really well. Got great greens and reg stats. And then obviously, see, you put all that together, you presume he would have some course form, and hey-ho, there it is. He's got 12th, 4th, 12th the last 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah, I think 28-1 is more than fair on this sort of course. I think, yeah, it'll definitely separate the quality ball strikers, and he's definitely one of those. And I mean, there's one doubt, isn't there? That's his putter.
Yes, I was just about to mention that.
But you look at the stats, this is not a putting contest, is it? I know you can't just not putt well, but I think he's 90th strokes green putting this year, which is okay, sort of mid-division. So I think the other parts of his game, and you know, each week goes on, you've got to presume he's getting more comfortable.
It looked that way last week, didn't it, late on especially? I mean, we didn't get to see much of Keegan Bradley or Jordan Spieth in the coverage last week, but you've got to assume that Bradley started to putt a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And you know, he says he loves this course. He says he loves Bermuda grass, you know, back in Florida. I think he's got a cracking each-way chance. I think he's due a win as well.
Yeah.
So 28, yeah.
Well, he's definitely due a win. It's been a few years now, hasn't it, for him? And a player with his undoubted talent needs to be back in the winner's circle very shortly. I'm going with a guy I picked the last time was on the podcast at Pebble Beach, and Daniel Berger again for me. I just think, I'm not saying it's the wrong price, but I think he's a bit of value at 125-1. Tipped him up at Pebble at 100-1. This is a stronger field this week, but I don't think they've taken into account that 10th place finish. I mean, that was a top class finish again from Berger. He's clearly a very talented player, and this is a home game for him. Went to Florida State University, born and bred in Florida. He actually plays, I think, in Jupiter, his golf. Had a couple of years collegiate golf at Florida State, and his rookie run includes a 13th at the Sony Open. I was reading betting journalist Steve Rawlings, his piece on this tournament, and he mentioned the correlation with the Sony Open and this event, which looks like a good...
Something like three winners, three recent winners have won both.
Yeah, which looks is a good stat. Yeah. And he subsequently finished 10th at the Phoenix Open, the 10th that I mentioned at Pebble, and then 24th at the Farmers. Hits at a mile, striking his irons well, well up there on the ball striking statistics this season. So maybe one to look at in the top 10 and top 20 markets as well, but I'll play him a point each way at 125.
making me laugh slightly with the Olympic theme running through this, because his dad's the Olympic tennis coach.
He is, isn't he? Yeah.
Is Mo Farah playing? Tip him to win the...
Could be, yeah. I didn't
some
even
event in London.
Didn't cotton on to that when I was thinking about the picks. But
got
yeah,
a double on that Olympic double.
Olympic double, Daniel Berger and Byung Yun Ahn this week.
What a price that could be. My other one. I don't know if I can quite bring myself to tip him. Well, you can have a little bit, as Mike said the other week. At big odds, Zach Blair.
Okay.
I was just randomly, you know, scrolling down the prices like you do, just to see players that are slightly in your head from other weeks. And I thought, it'll be under 25s. I think he might have settled in on that sort of price. And I thought, kept going. Where is he? And I found him. Well, I've lost him again now.
300-1
he is. Yeah, and there he is, 300-1. And I thought, really? Because I was going to put him up at Pebble Beach a few weeks ago on the grounds that he'd come six at the Sony. And you've already mentioned that that link.
Yeah,
that Steve mentioned, and he was 11th at the Farmers Insurance Open. So I got a 6th and 11th. I guess they're surrounded by miscuts, and he's got two miscuts on his last two starts. But you know, last week, I mean, Pebble Beach, he missed the cut with 70 71 70. That's hardly a crime. And last week, 77 opening round, 70 round two. Well, 70 was a subpar round. I mean, in a tournament where with a minus 6, it's hardly alarm bells, is it?
No, it's a good point.
So I just think he's already proven that he can hack it at this level with a 6th and an 11th. But, you know, I just can't see why he's been shunted out that far. I mean, the other little bonus is he's played one event. He's sort of very much a quick riser, and he played just one event in Florida on the web.com last year and finished runner-up. So that's another bonus towards his chances. You can get him top 10 at 25-1. I think that's probably a realistic target for Zach Blair at this stage, because a pretty quality field. He's got a, you know, you could almost look at the top end of the market and think, well, it's hard to see four or five of them being kept out, or you know, maybe three or four will clog up the top five maybe. So there's some gaps, I think, further down. I'd rather play in top I think top five's being a bit greedy. Yeah, I'll have a little bit at 300 just because you're off a cliff, aren't you, if he wins that.
Yes, obviously.
But yeah, I think top 10's realistic if he can just sneak that 25-1. I think he's got some good credentials, and that Sony link is encouraging. As I say, the miscuts, I think if you drill down a bit into those miscuts, they're not as bad as you think.
Now, we talked about this being an event where proper players win. We've had some shocks, haven't we, here in the past? Russell Henley last year was a little bit of a shock, and well, was more than a little bit of a shock in terms of a price perspective. And throughout the years, Michael Thompson, 2013, that was a shock as well. Sabatini and Vijegas both winning here. He's one that I want to mention, actually, Camilo Vijegas, because he played well last week. I think as a previous winner here, he could be one that might make a few waves this week as well at a big price, 150-1. Camilo Vijegas.
I remember when he won in 2010, he went off at 50s, and I was at the time, I think that was a really good price.
Yeah,
I remember. Oh, how did I miss that one? He's obviously...
He's not kicked on, has he, as you would have expected, Vijegas?
He looks a superstar, didn't he, for a while? Him and Anthony Kim seems to be the future of golf, and now one's gone missing. Actually gone missing.
Yeah.
Another one's just gone missing in a sort of figurative sense.
Love a day in the life of, wouldn't you, Anthony Kim?
Yeah, my word. Vijegas, he just pops up, doesn't he, every so often again still. Still shows he's got it. And, yeah, on this course, I think he'll like it. I mean, you talk about the type of winner. I think, was it Mark Wilson who won a few years ago? Was he in that playoff as well? I think he might have made another playoff. But there's some Y.E. Yang as well.
We've had some shot winners of this event, haven't we? So hopefully Daniel Berger will be another one.
Yeah, a couple of those have gone on to win the Open as well. I've gone on to win majors as well. Y.E. Yang, McIlroy, Harrington.
Yeah.
Todd Hamilton, another one. It's kind of, sometimes it's a good marker, this event, for challenging in a major. You can see why, because it's just tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, wins a factor as well. So, especially this year's major venues that are all on links courses, this could be a good sort of prep, couldn't it?
Yeah, definitely, you know, could be a precursor.
Someone pops up at a seventh, you disregard a bit, I think that, you know, that could be a marker.
Yeah, should be a couple of good events this week. I had numerous names on the long list this week, I must admit. I like Harris English, but didn't like the price at 33s.
Yeah, I'm similar.
I think he'll go well. I thought Pat Reed might have been on your mind at 40-1. Do you think he'd like a slightly lower scoring venue, Pat Reed, perhaps?
Possibly. I did have him sort of been willing to back him at 16s and 20s. I should really be jumping at 40s. I just thought maybe he might just get a bit frustrated and maybe it's just a bit too much of a challenge maybe for someone with a shorter temper than we like.
Justin Thomas is 66-1. He's obviously having an incredible season. I think Chris Kirk is a decent price at 50s and one I fancy will pop up at some point in an event like this. Daniel Summerhayes at 150-1, who I like. He is going to come good at some point, in my opinion, Summerhayes.
Yeah, 12th last year.
Yeah.
I think Robert Streb was another one I looked at. From my point of view, he's really good form of late. 18th in his one go around this track. Clearly likes it.
80-1 for a guy that... I mean, his early season form was exceptional, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he's not really taking many backward steps at the moment, so Streb at 80s looks decent.
McDowell, obviously, likes this sort of tough challenge, won at Pebble Beach, windy conditions. Got some really good course form, hasn't he, McDowell? A couple of ninths in the six. But 28, that's about his money, isn't it? That's nothing to get too excited about.
Just a quick word on McIlvoy then before we wrap up.
It's just the price, isn't it? Just the price, 100 to 30.
He could start going off 6-4, 11-8 into Tiger territory in time, couldn't he? But not there yet, just
it,
yet.
It could, but you almost feel you could just back someone at a 3-ball and come away with a 10-3 winner without enduring all sorts of stress to get him over the line. I can't see him just walking away with this.
No.
I mean, the other factor with him is all the court case stuff. Will that have an effect on his...
Well, it's not, has it really yet?
Well, that was... Didn't he won his last event before it went in? Yeah, you don't know, do you?
No,
it's a sort of slightly...
He's given away that bundle of money now, hasn't he? I suppose hopefully
maybe
he'll be able
to get it back.
Yeah, maybe he'll be able to keep it behind him and now just get on with rebuilding the masses of money that has accumulated over his career so far.
I think he finishes second enough, doesn't he, to put you off. If he was 9-2, it's almost an each way back to nothing. Yeah. 10-3, you've got to go win only, really. And you look at his record, there's a lot of seconds in there.
Yeah,
he does often find one too good for him, so I can ignore him.
Okay, let's recap the picks then. In the Joburg Open, just the one selection for me, I'm going a point each way on Byung Yun Ahn at 22-1. And in the Honda Classic, I'll play a 1.5 points each way. I do fancy Justin Rose this week at 20s and a point each way Daniel Berger at 125. Steve?
Yeah, I'll see your Ahn and I'll match that as well. 22s, Mulroy point each way as well at 50s in South Africa. Keegan Bradley, 1.5 points each way at 28. Really do fancy him for each way this week. And just a cheeky point. Let's have half a point on the 300s for Zach Blair and then...
A slightly bigger bet at 25.
A point at 25, that seems fair.
Superb. We're going to have to resurrect the free lunch bet at some point as well, where you put a man up and I put a man up, and we're almost there with Rose versus Bradley. Maybe not quite, but we're almost there with
Does that work? We can do
whoever finishes. Yeah, whoever finishes higher,
and it doesn't matter what price they are. So I couldn't pick McIlroy then, could I?
No, you couldn't pick McIlroy.
Deemed unfair.
It would usually be two players where similar prices.
Yeah.
That you've selected in your outright.
Yeah, and you're
market.
Both sort of happy that he's your rival.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's do that.
Okay, I'll take Rose and you can have Bradley.
Right.
Free lunch bet on that.
You're on.
Okay. Thank you for your company, Mr. Tindall. Who's the player you don't want to win this week? We sort of teased it earlier, didn't we?
Yeah, I think it's Gregory Bordy.
Yeah. I'll be with you then on Bordy. I wouldn't want to see him win.
Yeah.
And I think Harris English, if he was a slightly bigger price in the States, I expect him to get another win soon, and I think he handles these kind of conditions as well.
Yeah, I think that's a fair shout. Yeah, I will there's about 20 who I could say for the America one, so we'll pass on that.
Thank you, Mr. Tindall. Thank you, everyone, for listening as well. Remember, you can download this via iTunes or check us out at audioboom.com by typing in William Hill. Pre-tournament bets for the Joburg Open must be on by 6 a.m. here with William Hill on Thursday, and the Honda Classic you've got until 1 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. Enjoy your betting this week, folks, and myself and Dave will be back next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.